Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to West Coast Bookstores Podcast. Here is your main event. Your hosts, Kendra and Jess, defend their bookshelf corners in an epic book battle. Let's get ready to ruffle some pages.
Welcome to the first East Coast, first West Coast book battle. Everyone wants more, so we thought we'd give you a little present to enjoy from us to you. You're welcome. Let's welcome our guests on the opposing team on the East Coast who somehow managed to love the book, This Savage Song, Paige and Craig.
Hi.
Hi.
So at the beginning of the book, Kate is trouble, obviously. So she actually took me back to my adolescence. She was breaking noses. She was smoking. She was cheating. She was verbally abusive. The fact that I only did 3 out of 4 of those things, I'll let you decide which one to leave out.
I'm not picking.
I'm trying so hard not to laugh. Did you burn down any churches?
No, I didn't do that, obviously. I don't get caught at doing things, Craig. That's why I'm still here in front of you.
But she still didn't do that.
I liked that we had a partially deaf main character. You don't really get that a lot in YA books or any books, really, that because they're so hard to write, I guess.
I forgot that she was partially deaf.
Personally, I resonated with that because I struggle with my hearing and I have for years. And I thought that was something awesome to have some representation there that you don't see a lot.
That is true. They get a point for that, I guess.
I like that take on it.
Plus, she kind of had to respect her straight from the beginning because she literally is just destroying things to get attention.
I always thought it was cool to burn down a church, and now I get to read about it.
I refuse to comment on that on the grounds that my school will hear that.
Now I know who to call if I need somebody to help me, you know, dig a grave.
That's good.
Paige is literally Kate Harker. I just realized that.
So the first couple chapters, when I was reading this book, I think I came unhinged at one point, trying to figure out what the hell was going on. Now, I love mysteries, don't get me wrong, but there are things I need to know in order to understand the story. And when you wrap it into fantasy, you can't just leave people guessing. So here we get into some of these words that they did not have a reference for in the book. We have the Corsi. I said Malachi. I know there's no A in the middle of that, but that's the way it's staying. And the Sunai, that's what I said. And they weren't explained until around page 23. And for me, that was just way too long. I'm not saying give up your secrets, but at least let me know what I'm reading about.
I was confused. Is it a post-apocalyptic world? Is it a modern world? I was really confused about that whole scenario. Because, like, there was a school and everything, but there's all these killer monsters everywhere.
It is a parallel world, because as Kate goes in to explain how she always pictures herself in a different setting, she asks herself, where are you? That's how you know that it's a parallel universe to our own.
Oh, okay. That makes sense, because I was lost, too, and I had the feeling like a bomb had gone off anytime one of the monsters was created, and that's where that apocalyptic feel came from. But I hadn't considered a parallel.
I didn't consider that either. I remember her saying that she pretended to be somewhere else, but it never clicked in my head. Oh, this is a parallel world to all of that.
Paige is smart.
Super Paige smart. Paid attention to English class.
I didn't do that at all. I said I know English already.
Aren't we the best to be doing book reviews?
I read the words.
I agree that it was weird they didn't really describe what the monster's purpose was, like where they really came from. For a long time in the book, you knew there were monsters, you didn't know why they existed.
It feels more natural in some books to have it like that, because the thing that really gets me in a lot of books is you have the main character, they're standing in a mirror and they're like, I look like this, and this is what's happening, and this is where we are now, and now let's get into the story. That feels very unnatural to me. That's why I really like this book, because the storytelling is very natural. It's not forced at all.
Is it spoiling to explain where the monsters come from?
No, we are a spoiler podcast. Spoil everything.
I loved that the monsters come from sins, horrible things that we do. That was such an incredible thing, and it was kind of allegorical in a way, or am I thinking metaphorical, that the things we do just generate more hate and more pain and more suffering, that whenever you do something horrible, it just causes something else even more horrible to occur.
But how far do the boundaries go? That's my question. Like, if I hit somebody upside the head because they're being stupid, does that make a sin person?
No.
A little imp is going to appear on your shoulder.
It's where brownies come from. No, I did like that too. That really made sense to me out of the entire book. Yes, I can see that happening.
But then what if you gave this monster a hug and petted it on the head? Wouldn't that just make it go away?
It would stab you in the face.
It was already created. It's not going to go anywhere.
But when you create something, can't you uncreate it? Well, I guess if you have a baby, you can't like push it back up.
I mean, I kind of see what you're saying there. If the creation of the creature is hate and something horrible, could you negate it by doing something extremely good?
Right. But I guess that doesn't happen in this parallel world.
Apparently there's no such thing as love in this world.
I think that's where the second book is going to go into.
Is the second book out?
Has the second book been released?
I don't know. Has it?
Yes, it has.
I thought it was very interesting when they finally let him out into the real world and the people just automatically confessed, spilled their guts all around him. So I'm wondering, why didn't Henry and Emily confess like that around him when they were having the big fight of him actually getting out and helping? They just had a huge argument, and for some reason they got to keep their secret, which was the complete opposite of what everyone and their dog was doing. Even the bully Jack, in a matter of seconds, confesses to him. And this is the scene where he first goes up to the school. What is the other side called? Because there was two different cities.
Harker's is called North City.
Okay, and what's in the middle?
The middle is a wasteland that was destroyed by August's sister, Isla.
Okay.
Ooh, I said it right.
When she released her powers, it's a 4-block radius of just nothing, rubble and waste.
That was my favorite character, and she wasn't even in the book.
Didn't have enough screen time.
She just destroyed everything, and Kendra automatically loved her.
Now, Henry and Emily, who were they again?
Henry and Emily were the leaders of South City, and they were August and Leo and Ilsa's parents, kind of, adopted parents.
They lived under Leo, Isla, and August's influence, and all three of them are Sune. And I think because they lived under that, and they were so used to it, that they were able to keep back some of their secrets from spilling.
They built an immunity, basically, is what happened.
Did it say that in the book, though?
No, we're just going to go with that because, you know, plot holes.
See, for me, the author would have to say that in order for it to be true. So for me, through the entire book, no kidding, it switches from people that just don't shut up around him that are really infected. And then there's people that are so quiet and they don't do anything. One of them is Kate, and it drove me insane. And I was just like, give me a blood pressure cuff because this old lady needs to know if she's stable while I was reading this book.
He actually does explain to Kate that the reason his powers aren't really effective against her is because she's never actually hurt anybody.
And in the book, when you see that August is getting more nervous or upset or something, that's when his influence comes out and people start talking around him.
So he was never nervous around Kate?
He was comfortable.
Because they had a thing.
Ooh. We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
One of my favorite scenes in the book, honestly, was the scene, the theater, when all the refugees were rounded up in the theater, when August actually kind of displayed what his purpose was.
The theater? I don't remember that scene.
They thought that monsters had started appearing in this world and people took cover because they were afraid of what was happening. They didn't understand what was happening. And someone decided, let's leave this earth. And he shot up everyone in there and shot himself. And that's how Isla was born.
I don't remember that at all. And that sounds like something I would really remember.
When I find the page number, I'll give it to you.
She was just excited at the aftermath.
Isla is the best one in this book. I don't know why they didn't put more of her in there.
You really need to read book two. There's more of Isla in book two, and she becomes a very important character.
I don't want to touch book two after I read this.
But Isla.
I just realized where I've heard that name before. Jurassic Park. Isla Nublar.
Oh my goodness.
Island of destruction and mayhem.
That's actually what her name is supposed to mean, as island, because she's so quote-unquote loony, lost in her mind, that she is of herself.
I don't think it's that she's as, like, loony. I think she's drawn into herself because the thing that created her was such a horrible experience that it kind of damaged something in her mind when she was created.
I think that's a good point, because you can see a little bit of that in every one of them. Like Leo. Leo's backstory is that he was born of a cult sacrifice.
Jim Jones.
Yes. And that's why he's so kind of fanatical. And then August is so childlike and scared and nervous because he was born of a school shooting.
That makes sense. I like how that plays part in them.
Jessica, did you get any of this while you were reading it? Because I did not.
No, but I like the description now.
And also throughout the book, it's not as present, but because I like to pay attention to themes, there's a lot of themes about racism throughout the book. How there's two separate cities, how everything's kind of separated but equal, how kids are taught school rhymes, which is kind of a parallel to how kids used to back in the day were taught all these rhymes about the other races and how quote-unquote awful and quote-unquote scary they are, stuff like that.
I didn't get that either. I feel like I didn't read this book at all, and I know that I read it because I did not like it.
Okay, did you read it or did you skim it?
No, I read, and in complete silence.
We just didn't think to look deeper at what this actually meant. I knew Paige was going to have really good insight on this book, and I should have been like, so I need a buddy read because somebody has to translate this.
I think I'm kind of biased just because I really love all the stuff that V. Schwab writes. And I don't think I've ever read anything by her that was terrible. So I think going into this, I had expectations that this is going to be an amazing story, and it turned out to be an amazing story.
For you.
What were you going to say about the pictures, Kendra?
The pictures. That was annoying. Oh, by the way, if you haven't checked out Paige's picture, you need to go do that. It'll give you an insider's look at how August must have looked in the office area whenever he was taking it, because she actually got her eyes to, what is that, scribbles?
I don't know. Blur.
Blurred out. There we go. That's the right word.
Yeah.
Blurred out.
Paige's picture is on our Instagram page, guys, if you want to go check it out.
It's also on hers, if you want to check it out. It's Pop the Butterfly. The pictures, I would have thought they would have made that a priority type like thing, because they should have known. I mean, they're on camera a lot, right? Because they have cameras everywhere. And then they took all those extra precautions to pull him on the underground tunnels and the little, what is it, a coin necklace. But they never thought of, hey, you're going to need a school ID to get inside. And then don't even get me started on the empty office. I'm using quotation marks right now, but you can't see them.
How convenient.
None of them had really infiltrated North City before, and none to the extent of the school. And because Kate had got herself transferred basically last minute into that school, it was kind of a last minute thing. Like, oh, now she's a target. Now we can get to Harker. And I do have a thing about school photo office. When I was in college, my school photo office was actually empty a lot, and they left the door open.
Yeah, same here, honestly.
If you could only see Kendra and I's faces, we're like, what?
Yeah, my school office, nowhere was it ever empty. I mean, when everybody was in class, the halls would be empty sometime, but not ever an office or a class. Well, if a classroom was empty, it was locked. Maybe it's just because I grew up in, I mean, I don't know where you guys went to school, but I grew up in a city outside of Houston, but it was still a bit like we had a lot of students.
But it was like Paige's college experience. And so I guess you assume adults are out partying by then?
Even my colleges, there's no way that something would be left. Okay, well, there was one professor, but he was a little nutty. And he told everyone that he kept his, he's like, my door is always open. And then somebody started stealing his geology rocks because he was telling everybody that it was open. And then he started, yeah. And then he started locking his office. You see, that's what happens when you tell people you leave things open.
Well, see, they didn't need to worry about this open office before this situation.
Well, I mean, they got monsters everywhere. I think an open office is like the last thing on their mind.
North City is really a city for the rich. You can only afford to live there if you can afford to get a favor to get a medallion.
Oh, that's the coin necklace that I was talking about.
Okay. So then upper crust, you're just, they're busy. They're out living life instead of, and enjoying their riches instead of worrying about what's going on at an office, because they've already gotten their confirmation of being in that society. They don't have to worry about those kind of things, maybe.
Jessica, stop giving them points.
Oh, rats!
Basically, though, it's, I think what Paige was alluding to is the fact that you had to do a favor to get one of those coins. Everybody kind of trusted everybody in that area because everybody was supposed to be like upper class, good citizens.
You can also tell it's a rich school because they had enough to afford a recording studio, a professional one.
Right. I forgot about that, too.
My son's school is poor and they have a recording studio. I'm pretty sure someone donated it, the money to get it done.
But did they have enough to afford a couple where you could schedule time slots for?
Well, I mean, they have one, but they also have a video production studio too.
Dang, we're like dirt poor over here. We don't got nothing like that.
Well, I'm almost positive that it's because somebody donated it. Sloan was creepy. He was
mildly, like, he seemed a little bit pedophilic.
Ew.
Mildly, he was a little too interested in Kate. That's what I thought was creepy about him.
Well, I thought he was always too interested in her because he thought that at one point she might be able to take his place.
All I got was like Voldemort vibes from him.
He failed trying to kill her and her mom. He successfully killed her mother, Kate's mother, but he was supposed to totally wipe them both out. So she's the failure that's in his face now.
She's right. I remember that.
So exactly like Voldemort then. The failure that's just in your face, and that's what pisses you off so much.
Well, I always wondered about him because he gets introduced as Harker's right-hand monster. He's learned how to control them. So I'm wondering why they're not doing that on the other side. I mean, there's no right way to have a war. But let me tell you, if I'm in a war, I'm going to be doing everything in my power to win.
They did kind of do that on the other side with the brothers and the sister. They were using them as weapons, too.
You were talking about the Sunai, though, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking about there's more of them, the core side. How did you guys say those words? Yeah, come on.
There's Sunai, there's Maokai, and there's Korsai.
Okay, so then I said them the way you said them.
They did have an army that they were raising. They're raising the Republic on the south side, which is different conglomerates of monsters that live on the south side. Harker's not really raising an army when it gets to the part where Kate's noticing the H is branded on the Malachi's faces. That's a callback to slavery. They're literally slaves of Harker.
That part I did get. Ooh, proud moment.
Well, looking back, there's a lot of allegories to racism and stuff.
I didn't grow up around racism, so it doesn't ever click with me that that's what they're alluding to.
Well, Paige and I live in the South, and it's kind of everywhere.
True. Good point.
I lived in the South. It is kind of everywhere. I mean, it's still kind of everywhere here in Nevada, too. Ooh, I said that wrong. Nevada.
I've been pronouncing it wrong my whole life.
That is completely allowed here.
You don't say Nevada?
That's okay. I still say Amarillo, Texas.
Oh, God.
Due to Spanish class. Going back to the Sunai, they eat souls, and their victims confess before they die. What about that?
Like a naughty Catholic schoolboy who showers after sex?
Oh, you went there.
Oh, my God. I can't breathe.
Love Craig's reaction to that.
So Sunai are, I really like them because they are born of the most evil of evil crimes, mass murders, bombings, shootings. But their main purpose is to get people that are purely evil themselves to confess to their sins and to right all the wrongs in the world. And they do that through either beautiful music or pain in Leo's case, but mostly beautiful music in Isla and August's case.
Can I just say, though, I really liked Leo's character for that fact that pain was his art form. To me, I kind of saw him more as a villain than a hero. I know he's technically supposed to be a good guy, but he was very villainous. Thought that was very intriguing.
He's also the only Sunai that we see that can use multiple musical weapons against people. He has a guitar in one, he has a flute in another, I believe, and I think he could wield August's violin, it said in one point.
I just want to point out that Craig likes pain, and I was just thinking about dominatrix things this whole conversation.
No, he only likes pain when it's like in the book.
Please do not let anyone in my school hear this.
Next week, Craig's going to talk about 50 Shades of Grey.
Do you have a red room?
Oh, God.
So maybe ultimately the Sunai can't eat dirty souls.
I think it's just the fact that if you do anything harmful to someone else that they can feed off of you. I don't think the confessing is necessary for the consumption.
There's got to be something tied to that. She put that aspect into her story for a reason.
I know Catholics, you're absolved of all your sins if you go to confession.
That was the point I was going to bring up too, that it's the in your last moments, or if you think you're about to face your last moments, you want to confess to have a clean soul to go to wherever you're going to go to.
Oh, that's true.
So then the Sunai are merciful in that they let their victims or their dinner confess to that.
They're humane.
I just love that we are always told as kids not to play with our food, but here are the monsters playing with their food.
Poor August, she can see it's such a job, though.
Oh, yeah, he struggles with it. But in terms of eating, there was an item randomly that we had pop up.
Yeah, it was gross. They're going to say I'm nitpicking, but I say it's a lesson in hygiene. Who shares a full apple unless it's cut in half? Did you wash it? How about your hands? Because he rolled it in between them for an awfully long time, and then she bit into it. That is so gross.
That doesn't sound appetizing. Like, please don't touch my food like that.
It's like a three-year-old making food and deciding he wants to share it with everyone.
After picking his nose.
They're regularly surrounded by blood and monsters and death. I don't think food hygiene is really high on their list.
It should be, because it's disgusting.
Next up, August gets his first taste of bloodshed.
And then he doesn't like it. What did he think helping at the seam meant? Twiddling his thumbs and eating pumpkin pie? Plus, we're told Sunai are indestructible. Which Superman found out the hard way, no one is indestructible, so I'm sure there's a way to kill him. They just haven't told us yet. And considering it took half the book to figure out what the monsters were, I'm guessing we won't know until after I die.
Especially since you're not reading book two. Probably tells us how it happens in there.
But he kills the man, and in my opinion, he didn't even really have to kill him if he didn't want to, because he could have just let the guy wail on him for a really, really long time until Leo did the job.
Oh, that's right.
Leo and August's relationship is really complicated. They're brothers, but Leo is a far more dominant person. August has this fear of Leo, and you can tell throughout the book that he's very nervous and very contained within himself when he's around Leo. Like, he doesn't want to say too much around him. In this scene in particular, I don't think it was the bloodshed, because he's been around death and he woke up in the middle of a school shooting where there was gore and blood everywhere. It was the fact that this person had to suffer so much because August was being forced to kill him. August's way of killing people is for them to go more peacefully to them and they don't suffer.
It was more like maybe the concept of it, the action of it.
But wasn't he playing his violin? Was he just, like, gutting him with a knife? I can't remember. I don't have the book.
Page 186, He turned just in time for his knife to bury itself in the attacker's stomach. August looked down at the blade disappearing between the man's ribs with a mixture of shock and horror as the man let out a strangled sound of pain. He never had that pain when he played the violin.
Okay, so maybe Leo was forcing him to gut him?
Leo forced the knife into his hands and basically was saying that he had to kill him this way. He was trying to teach August self-defense. That's what it was, I believe. And August didn't want to do it, and the man lunged at August to get away. It was just an accident that August's knife went into the man's stomach.
I've realized a problem here.
Oh, yeah, do tell. Craig, do tell.
The UK edition has different page numbers from you guys. So here I am reading one page 186. I'm like, what the hell are they talking about?
But that goes back to the original question. He said he wanted to help at the seam. And the seam, I'm assuming, is super bloody. I'm guessing he thought he was going to be sitting there twiddling his thumbs and eating pumpkin pie, which I will join you if that is what's happening.
Kendra's just going to sit among the dead bodies and eat pumpkin pie.
Food and Isla, that's all I need.
I do think that one aspect of Leo and August's relationship is Leo's kind of like a big brother to him, and he doesn't really want to let him down, but at the same time, he fears Leo, so it's complicated.
We finally get some action to get to see what these monsters are capable of, and then they use the name Oliver. This is the one time I'm expecting hieroglyphics to show up in the book, and they use my grandson's name. So I am picturing this cute, adorable little white baby with long claws and in a diaper. And then August saves Kate, and they couldn't just hate each other. Nope, it has to be this Romeo-Juliet thing while I say a curse on both your houses.
I'm laughing so hard and trying to keep it in and made my head hurt.
He's the baby from The Incredibles.
No, has anybody ever played the video game Dante's Inferno?
No.
They have these little babies in purgatory or in hell that are unbaptized babies, and they're like these babies with these long sword hands.
Oh, wow. It's
immediately what came to mind.
Run away! Now, mid-book, we know that somebody is behind all this planning. So who did you guys think it was? Because my money was on Leo the whole time.
I thought it was Harker.
I thought it was Sloan.
I thought it was Harker, too.
And when they told me it was Sloan at first, I was so disappointed. I was like, he's so stupid. How did that happen?
Yeah, see, to me, Sloan didn't seem intelligent enough to come up with anything on his own. He was kind of like a drone that just went along with whatever Harker told him to do. Sloan was just a horribly developed character. That was the one part of the book I didn't like.
You're supposed to be on my side.
I liked every other character except Sloan.
Now the truth comes out.
My favorite character was August, 100%. I loved him so much. Just because he was so damaged. And
the only part I liked about August was when he went mad.
We all have those moments.
Some of us more than others.
So, moving on. The way that some of the fighting was described, she can run and jump and roll and dodge, yet she's got a giant bite in her shoulder. She's got gut wounds. The girl is like a fountain of unending blood.
It's kind of like Hollywood movies when you see the overdramatic explosions and people that get shot multiple times or guns that go off without having to be reloaded. You don't question it. You just enjoy it.
In their defense, Kate did get stitched up, and I believe they mentioned antibiotics and pain medicine that was given to her. And I think she took the pain meds a few times throughout the books. There's also adrenaline. I'm not saying that like everything that she did was possible, but when you have enough adrenaline running through you, you tend to forget about the pain. I mean, I walked up 4 flights of stairs on a broken leg.
I'm pretty sure when you're fighting a Corsai who's ready to eat you, then you're going to get a massive adrenaline rush.
My only concern about that part, she does eventually pass out in the car underground, like the whatever train thing that was underground. And at that point, when you've lost that much blood and you passed out, you're not really going to get back up unless a doctor or nurse or somebody gives you more adrenaline or you get some type of blood infusion. Her whole fighting stance is just illogical. It doesn't compute in my head because she had a giant bite on her shoulder. She was running and jumping, rolling on roofs. And then the thing claws her and her guts are basically falling out. I just don't see how she went all that time. And then she had to drive herself to the next city. No, I see you passing out and you dying an ugly, terrible death.
Couldn't have that happen, though.
Well, of course not.
It's just, like I said, Hollywood movie type deal. You just go along with it and enjoy the show. Because then the story would just end on a horrible note.
And then he confesses all of his top secrets to her.
Okay, see, when a guy and a girl really love each other.
Is it love? Is it love at this point?
It has to be. It has to be for it to work.
I mean, it's the first pretty girl he saw. He'd been locked up in a compound this whole time.
So what you're saying is you are doing 50 Shades of Grey next week.
I walked into that one. I deserve that.
You really fault the book, though, for cliches that every book has.
Obviously, the cliches are going to come in there somewhere. We've read so many books.
The same thing can be said of just about any YA book that has a lot of action, like Throne of Glass. How many times should Aelin have died?
So for our U.S. book holders, on page 295, and maybe Paige knows more about this because she obviously knows this book better than we do, but there comes a backpack that no one ever mentions, like ever. And I actually went back into the book to see if it was mentioned whenever they started the whole journey. I didn't see anything about it. So not only is she indestructible, apparently, like August is, but they have this backpack that shows up. And I think I went back to page 272 and it doesn't mention anything about a backpack, just August taking his violin. Oh, get this. She's carrying the backpack with her bleeding her shoulder and the cuts on her stomach. I don't know about you, but when I had a backpack when I was in school, it was fucking heavy and I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Well, if you're Kate Harker, are you really bringing home school books to do homework?
She could be. You don't know.
In a survival situation, you're willing to put up with just about anything to get out alive. And the supplies in that backpack were important.
I believe the backpack is mentioned, though, very early in the book. I believe August mentions putting stuff into it for his first day of school. So it's assumed that he's been taking that backpack to school.
I believe it's her backpack that she takes, though. But I don't have the book, so I can't really... But that really bothered me because I went back and I looked and there's no mention of them taking a backpack at all.
Definitely mentioned grabbing his violin.
Well, these kids came right from school after an attack and they'd been on the run since.
I'm just saying if somebody's attacking me and I'm going to run from them, I'm not thinking, hey, go get my backpack.
I'm in college. Those books are pretty damn expensive, okay?
I get why August took his violin because that's his weapon, but... To think about a backpack when you're running away from these things trying to claw your face off, I would just leave it and run.
They were actually leaving school. Kate and August was scheduled for the last session in his recording session. So he had a backpack with him, I assume. And Kate was leaving school. She would have took her backpack with her.
But she was rolling on the ground. That's my problem. Like, she was fighting with these people. She's always rolling on the ground from some reason. I don't know why. She hits the ground hard. It's like used 20 times in this book.
If they are regularly fighting monsters, their gear would be pretty damn strong.
Her gear wasn't strong at all. I don't think. I think it broke, didn't it? Didn't she have like a half pipe or something?
Maybe they spent all the money on the really strong backpack.
Backpack upgrade 100.
So when Isla goes dark, for me that was on page 378. That didn't make any sense to me because August goes for a few days without food. He has less control. It takes him forever to go dark, but then she just goes dark right away. And she just ate a man the day before.
But I think that was also partially her trying to protect August.
So can they go dark whenever they want to? Or they have to stop eating in order to do that?
Honestly, I think if they really wanted to, they could just go dark whenever.
I do that all the time.
Kendra's just going to be a walking nuclear bomb.
I'd come in handy when I'm driving.
Going dark isn't necessarily related to feeding. You can stop feeding to go dark. It doesn't necessarily correlate with that. But when you go dark, that means that an explosion is about to go off inside of you and you're the bomb. It doesn't necessarily correlate with eating. I think the more that you do it, or the bigger your explosion was previously, the more of a handle you have on it. Leo seems to just be able to, he could probably go in and out. And since Isla took out thousands of people in her previous fall, she's more equipped to handle it. August has only had one fall since his creation before the events of this book. So he's still very babyish.
So does this kind of lead into my whole argument of it kind of seems like she was trying to protect August from doing any more damage? I mean, that's what I glean from it.
She's very upset for what happened, that she was used as a bomb and that she killed all of those people. And I don't think that she wants that for August. She wants him to retain this innocence about him.
Like a big sister taking care of a little brother.
That's another theme of this book, is that it explores the fine line between innocence and what some would call adulthood, but is absolute corruption when you realize that the world isn't all full of sunshine and rainbows. The world is a dark and terrible place, and sometimes you will do dark and terrible things.
There's literally no sunshines and rainbows in this book at all. This world sucks.
August's parents did try to keep that semblance. They gave him books. They gave him what could be considered a normal life for him, what any parent would want their child to have in the face of this unjust world.
Almost like you mess up the first couple of kids, and by the third or fourth, you've got it down. You got it right.
Yes.
All I have to say is at the end of the book, they do not kiss. And I just thought, oh, that's so noble. And then I wondered if her lips were torn off in battle.
There's just too much blood there.
The ending of the book had me so confused at first that I had to reread it a couple of times just to really fully grasp what had happened.
I liked the ending. I liked the aspect that they didn't kiss, because that's not very realistic, and I hate that about YA books, that it seems to always point towards a romance. This pointed more towards a very close friendship. This wasn't very cut and dry, like they're going to fall in love and they're going to have kids and get married and be happily ever after. No, this is a bad world filled with bad things, but they are two people, although living on two different sides of these worlds that are very different. They can be friends and they can help each other out and they can make a difference.
Oh, I didn't want them to end up together at all.
I also kind of see August and Kate's relationship as being kind of symbolism for cooperating with people who are different than you and not being at odds with them and hating them just because you're taught to hate them. I really see that as being symbolism for what good you can bring to the world if you cooperate with the people that you've been taught all this time to hate.
It also symbolizes a true equality, where different people of different backgrounds can come together and do amazing things.
Or terrible things.
You drink blood, I drink grape juice. Let's just be friends.
Cue the song. Why can't we be friends?
That's how I imagined Sloane and Leo meeting up. They were like, you do this, I do that. In a way, actually, Harker was also involved in all of this. You find out towards the end that he was the one kind of orchestrating the death of his wife and daughter. So, in an essence, all three of us were right earlier.
Why did he do that? Does it ever say in book two?
I can only assume because he's an abusive prick.
Why did he bring his daughter back then?
He didn't want her back. She just kept messing up. I think in some way he was going to get rid of her.
Okay, final comments.
I personally enjoyed the book. I like that it had allegories to racism and the differences between classes and things like that. I think it had a lot of lessons for real life behind it. And I think it has the potential to make a lot of impact on people.
Are you sure about that?
Everybody except Kendra.
I didn't get any of this in-depth stuff from my reading. That's why I didn't fall in love with the book. It didn't hit home. It didn't click with me. So I was lost a lot of the times.
I am completely with Jessica. I didn't catch any of that stuff that you guys were talking about. I mean, I saw the whole racism with the H on the faces, and that was about it. Everything else, I looked at it and I was like, why isn't this girl dead yet?
I think that an important thing that you need to realize when you read a book is you need to ask yourself, how can this relate to real life? What is the author trying to allude to that is in reality? Because every story has something in reality that inspired it.
I think the thing that I always keep from this book is how beautiful the writing is and how easy it is to realize once you start putting yourself in the mindset of what the book is really trying to say about racism and all these other things. It's really enlightening and it's really easy to put yourself in the position of someone else that's been suffering this.
When I read, I don't want to look for the message behind the message behind the message behind. No, I don't want to go that deep. I read books for entertainment and to laugh.
It's like what Rafiki said in like Lion King 1.5, look beyond what you see.
No.
So I got a joke for you guys. What does a monster turn on during the summer?
The air conditioner.
The scare conditioner.
Oh. I didn't even know I got that right, kind of.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, BookmaBobs, on Etsy. They sell book sleeves, mug rugs, rice bags, and books signed by Kendra herself. Please review our podcast on iTunes and Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram at West Coast Booksters and on our personal bookish accounts at k.e.radke and fawnberries_books. Please also check out our guests' Instagram pages at popthebutterfly for Paige and fictitious.fox for Craig.
Well, I know Paige ruffled your pages, and I know Craig's definitely ruffled your pages today. And if he hasn't, you better tune in for next week for 50 Shades of Grey. Until next time.
You made me lose it. I can't breathe.